We all were given 30 days to implement a new law, to go from blank sheet of paper to full execution.
Looking for answers to veterans' healthcare access woes in Alaska? From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, August 26th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, highlighting the gender pay gap in the state.
Women make less money in every single industry in Alaska. And now we just need to figure out why.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Senator Dan Sullivan held a field hearing in Eagle River yesterday focused on health care for veterans in Alaska. It was an effort, he told the modest crowd, to bring D.C. to the state. As KSK's Zachariah Hughes reports, officials, politicians, and veterans themselves agree on what's recently causing massive problems for accessing health care. And now they're searching for solutions.
If it seems like there's been a lot of news lately about the VA in Alaska, you're right. And that's for two big reasons. Number one, the August recess is a time for congressional leaders and cabinet members to visit the communities they craft policy for. And two, since passage of the CHOICE Act a year ago, there have been some, let's call them hiccups.
But it's because of its one-size-fits-all design that the implementation of the CHOICE Act in Alaska has been nothing less than an unmitigated failure for our veterans.
Sullivan sits on the Senate's Armed Services Committee and has been upset by calls from constituents over severe disruptions that happened when the VA, to put it simply, ran out of money. Nationwide, the program actually worked too well. The number of medical appointments skyrocketed, but then so too did the costs for all that care. The result in Alaska has been canceled operations, enormous medical bills, and just a lot of confusion.
The key, though, tonight is we don't need rhetoric. What we need are answers.
There have been several listening sessions across the state this month, but a field hearing is different. This was the Armed Services Committee itself, officially convening for testimony. The consensus among everyone who spoke was that the VA was doing great in Alaska until the funding cuts exposed holes in the rapidly enacted CHOICE program. Verdi Bowen is the head of the state's Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, which almost overnight went from having some of the shortest wait times in the country to a confusing mess after CHOICE was enacted.
That program in itself wasn't ready for prime time. We had several veterans that were scheduled for colonoscopies, had gone through this prepped, went to the hospital, only to discover that the appointment had been canceled because there was no funding for the appointment.
In the whole debacle, a lot of fingers have been pointed at TriWest, the intermediary company that, under the CHOICE Act, has a contract to handle making referrals and appointments, which have slowed to a halt. TriWest's president, David McIntyre, says they are scrambling to keep up with an unanticipated explosion in demand from the hastily drafted legislation.
We all were given 30 days to implement a new law, to go from blank sheet of paper to full execution.
McIntyre says the company's already quadrupled its staff and is in the process of training another 1,000 employees. They're also making sure that calls for care are routed through Washington State, so personnel are more familiar with Alaska's unique access issues. The role of Congress was also brought up by Undersecretary for Health David Shulkin, third in command at the VA. Shulkin is new to his position. In fact, the hearing marked his 49th day on the job. He's also new to the VA. His background is with large private research hospitals, and from that experience, he expects finding internal fixes and efficiencies to improve the VA system. Still, he says the nation is dealing with a structural problem, trying to get more and more veterans connected with care.
We have to do a better job at VA of defining what our needs are and letting Congress know what we need to be able to do to take care of the veterans of this country who've served our country. But it may be that with better projections that we actually do need more resources.
Shulkin says the VA is preparing a proposal for November 1st that could reestablish the Alaska VA as the primary scheduler for appointments, grant more flexibility in choosing local care options, and consolidate funds for payment. Measures, Shulkin says, that don't stand a chance without support in Congress. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Republican presidential candidate Rand Paul spoke in Anchorage and Fairbanks Tuesday, kicking off a swing through western states for the Kentucky conservative. As KUIC's Robert Hannon reports, Paul received an enthusiastic reception in Fairbanks.
The ballroom of the Westmark Hotel was packed to hear what Rand Paul had to say Tuesday. The senator from Kentucky is one of almost a score of Republicans vying to be their party's contender for the presidency. Paul sounded traditional conservative themes of smaller government and tax cuts, but he also tried to set himself apart from fellow Republicans when it came to government waste. He told the audience he would hold the Pentagon accountable just as much as civilian bureaucrats.
Can you have $500 hammers and $600 wrenches and say, well, we've got plenty of money? No, if you want plenty of money for national defense, you need to spend it wisely. So I'm for auditing the Fed and the Pentagon.
Rand Paul also tried to distance himself from his competition in his resistance to foreign wars, particularly in the Middle East, as well as his objections to the national security agencies combing through private cell phone and internet traffic. Paul drew perhaps the loudest round of applause Tuesday in Fairbanks when he vowed to shut down all federal funding to Planned Parenthood.
And if you disagree and you say, well, what about women's health? There are 9,000 community health centers. Their community health centers have been doubled and tripled in size, and they are available across America, but they're not doing what Planned Parenthood does.
Rand Paul's stump speeches in Fairbanks and Anchorage follows a trail his father, Ron Paul, blazed 4 years ago in his own search for the White House. How effective the younger Paul's message will be to the party base and independent voters won't be known until early state nomination efforts in Iowa and New Hampshire play out. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
The YWCA Alaska is 1 year into their initiative to eliminate the gender pay gap in the state by 2025. Women in Alaska only make about 68 cents for every dollar made by a man. According to calculations based on U.S. Census data, this causes the state's economy to lose $1.2 billion every year. Women are making less, so they're spending less. YWCA CEO Hillary Morgan says one of the first steps to eliminating the pay gap is gathering data that shows it's real.
Women make less money in every single industry in Alaska. Every single one. And this is, again, Department of Labor stats. And now we just need to figure out why.
One example is nurses. 89% of the state's nurses are women, but they make 5% less than male nurses. Morgan says the YWCA is taking an apolitical, multi-pronged approach to ending the gap. 74 businesses and individuals spanning from BP Alaska to the governor have endorsed the initiative. It involves working with employers to make gender-balanced workplaces. Morgan says one tool is a survey that helps employers analyze the impacts of their official and unofficial policies.
Like, some of the things have come back and they say, well, we do this, but we don't really have a policy about it. So right away, then they know that, well, if you don't have a policy about it, then it's a word of mouth thing. So the woman who is not comfortable or confident enough to go ask for it is not going to get it.
They're also educating women and girls about career options, salary negotiations, and the nuances of hiring that may be leading to the wage gap. For example, studies show that some male hiring managers who have wives that don't work are less likely to hire women.
You can see how they got there. It's like, well, my wife doesn't work. I'm the breadwinner. So I don't want to take a job away from somebody who's going to actually be a breadwinner and give it to a woman. Like, you can understand the rationale, but if you go in for a job interview and you're being interviewed by that man, you're never going to know why you didn't get that job.
The Pew Research Center says women are the primary or only breadwinners in 40% of U.S. households. Morgan recently announced that she's running for state senate in District N. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaska's newest hydro project brings cheaper energy to Huna.
For people who would love the lifestyle here but don't dare take the risk due to the high cost of electricity,
They now know that they have support.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
Search crews have recovered the final victim of the August 18th Sitka landslide. The body of 62-year-old William Stortz was found Tuesday afternoon. Heavy equipment operators had been working at several locations identified by search dogs. A road was built up to the observation area at the south end of the slide, and a plywood boardwalk installed to improve the mobility of search crews on the ground. Searchers were under pressure to take advantage of 2 days of good weather before more rain arrives on Thursday. Now that all of the victims have been found, city officials estimate at least another 30 days of work to clear Kramer Avenue. At the first meeting of the Sitka Assembly since the slide, city officials spoke emotionally about the loss of the three local men and said they had been overwhelmed by the response of city staff, volunteers, and ordinary citizens. KCAW's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
The meeting began with a moment of silence to honor the three men who died in the August 18th landslide. It was announced by Assemblymember Aaron Swanson.
I ask that we take a moment of silence to honor the men we lost in last week's landslide, Elmer Diaz, Ulysses Diaz, and William Stortz.
The Assembly, city staff, and members of the public stood and observed a full minute of silence. It was followed soon after by emotional testimony from Fire Chief Dave Miller.
So for the last week or more, the people of Sitka have been flat amazing. They have gone far and above what I would ever have thought any community could ever have done.
Miller spoke about the hundreds of people who volunteered to help with the search or dropped off food. And he spoke of the thousands of dollars raised so far for the families of the three men and for those who were evacuated from their homes near the landslide.
A disaster like this hopefully happens in the community once in a bajillion years. And hopefully I never see another one like this ever. But in my mind, I've tried to write a letter to the editor and what it would say. And I've been doing this since last Tuesday. And I can never get past just thanks.
While he couldn't possibly thank everyone, Miller said, he gave special praise to Deputy Fire Chief Al Stevens, who has been running the day-to-day response and recovery effort. And he ticked off a host of local, state, and federal agencies that have responded, including the Coast Guard, state troopers, Forest Service, and National Park Service. Of the Sitka Fire Department itself, Miller said, "I work with the greatest people in the world." But above all, he thanked regular Sitkins.
We may not see eye to eye on everything, but when it comes right down to it, this community rocks.
Speaking after Miller, City Administrator Mark Gorman stood to address the assembly and audience.
In working with the Tlingit people, I learned that when you address people who you hold in high regard, you stand. And tonight, I hold this community in the highest regard. We recovered William tonight. We recovered the Diaz boys last week. Many remarkable moments in the last 7 days.
The strength, the courage, the humility of this community has been remarkable, he said. This is a community that stands tall and comes together. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholtz.
After a week of cleaning, the Bethel ME preschool is mostly back to normal. The classrooms were trashed by vandals earlier this month. Lower Kuskokwim School District Superintendent Dan Walker says students were back on Monday.
While it was a very negative event, it was quite heartwarming to see the outpouring of support, and we're really happy that we were able to get back up and running within a week. That was a really monumental effort.
Crews had to remove chemicals left by emptied fire extinguishers as well. After extensive cleaning, preschool staff came in Thursday and worked through Saturday to get classrooms ready. New computers and smart boards will arrive soon. The vandals also smashed windows in 13 of the school district's cars. Walker says the current estimate of damages hovers around $125,000, but it may grow to $150,000. Police identified five juveniles ages 10 to 13 who were suspects in the case and forwarded charges to the Department of Juvenile Justice.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Extra tough boots are ubiquitous in Southeast Alaska and often associated with fishing. Today, about 100 pairs of the brown rubber boots, along with photos of Alaskans, were on the steps of the Capitol building to protest mines in British Columbia. KTOO's Lisa Fu was there and has this report.
This day and this gathering is truly about celebrating clean water and healthy fisheries and the things that make Southeast what it is.
Edie Leghorn lives in Sitka. She's an organizer with Inside Passage Waterkeeper, a group focusing on clean water in Southeast Alaska. She's standing on the steps of the Capitol with about 40 other people.
Because this day is also about standing united as Alaskans to hold our elected officials accountable to the will of the Alaskan people, who have responded with a resounding not on our watch to the threat of mines in our Southeast Alaskan salmon streams.
The rally participants are carrying signs that say, "Get extra tough on BC mines," and "No more Mount Polly's." It's been about a year since the Mount Polly mine disaster in British Columbia, which spilled millions of gallons of mine waste into creeks and lakes. They don't want the same thing to happen at other BC mines near the border. Among the people and signs are pairs of extra tough boots. Caitlin Cardinal, also with Inside Passage Waterkeeper, says they represent the livelihood of people in Southeast Alaska.
We use and rely on these boots for our work that we do outside with commercial fishing, forestries, research. They're pretty much a staple in every Southeast Alaskan's footwear.
Cardinal says she brought about 200 pounds of boots from Wrangell to Juneau. Boots also came from other communities like Petersburg, Sitka, and Cape.
What we found through this project of collecting salmon stories and boots from Alaskans throughout the region is that Alaska is united on this issue. We have
Melina Marvin is executive director of Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. She met with Bill Bennett, BC's top mine official, who's traveling in Juneau and Ketchikan to discuss concerns about transboundary mines.
We really hope to send him and everyone the message that this is everybody. We don't always see unity on issues in Alaska. Certainly there's so many different types of people and controversies around many issues, but on this, people are united. We want to protect our salmon, our jobs, our way of life.
The rally participants want to see an international solution through the Boundary Waters Treaty, which was signed by Canada and the United States in 1909. The boots are being donated to Juneau's soup kitchen and shelter. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Alaska's newest hydropower project has been generating electricity since the beginning of August, but it only recently had its ribbon-cutting ceremony. The city of Hoonah is cutting diesel consumption by about a third, which could help the local economy. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
At the Gardena Falls Hydro Project, curious locals and lawmakers gathered to see how Hoonah will cut its diesel use by 30%. For years, it was the only option to power the village. Paul Berkshire is the engineer. He points to a structure near the falls that looks like a dilapidated log cabin.
Off to the right, downstream of the dam, these logs, this is the original attempt to build hydropower here. As near as I can tell, somewhere around 1926.
Unfortunately, that plan didn't work. But a $10.5 million grant, mostly from the state, made it possible to get the new project up and running. It's already saved 3,600 gallons of diesel and is expected to save up to 100,000 in a year.
Basically, if you can get anything to spin, you can produce electricity from it.
And so just so I understand, there's a stagnant pool over there that creates pressure. Then it flows down this tube through something that's like a water wheel, and that's what creates the electricity.
Yeah, simple enough.
The developer is the Inside Passage Electric Cooperative, which supplies energy to small southeast communities, Angoon, Klukwan, Cake, the Chilkat Valley, and Hoona. I caught up with Jody Mitchell, the cooperative's CEO, on a boat traveling from Juneau. She says when she started working there back in 1993, the price of diesel was about 79 cents a gallon.
Over my career at IPEC, we've seen prices go as high as $4.25 a gallon, and that's a wholesale bulk rate that we pay.
It's now close to $3 a gallon, but most residents don't pay for it all in their monthly energy bill. A state program called Power Cost Equalization tries to subsidize rural rates down to urban rates.
The businesses in the communities don't qualify for that because the power cost equalization only pays for residential accounts. And that leads to a whole host of problems.
Mitchell says you can see this reflected in the price of milk or a loaf of bread in Alaska's remote communities. And the high cost of energy could deter economic growth.
We're very comfortable with diesel. We know a lot about it. We're very experienced in it.
That's Ken Skaffelstad, the mayor of Hoona. The village of 750 has investor interest from outside. There's a new microbrewery in town, and a cruise ship dock under construction might bring in more tourists.
For people who would love the lifestyle here but don't dare take the risk due to the high cost of electricity, they now know that they have support, that they have people behind them that know of their struggle and that respond to it.
Jody Mitchell says for local businesses paying for electricity, the 30% could be huge. She hopes with the state's budget crunch, projects like this will continue to be prioritized and funded.
I am so proud of what we were able to accomplish here in Hoona. And I just hate to see that stop.
She says it might take longer for Gartina Falls to offset the price of electricity for Hoona residents. A sister hydro project is planned for Water Supply Creek. In Hoona, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Back in 1944, an Alaska Native 15-year-old girl named Roberta Skank stood up against the segregated seating policy at Nome's Dream Theater. Her case, paired with Elizabeth Perotrovich's, was instrumental in the passing of the 1945 Anti-Discrimination Act in Alaska. That was 10 years before Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat and nearly 20 years before the Civil Rights Act passed. KNOM's Kristen Loeffler has the story of the Nome resident who wants more Alaskans to know Alberta Skank's name.
We're going back in time to the year 1944, a year when many people in Nome frequented the Dream Theater for entertainment. But that same year, the Dream Theater also became the site of a historic event when a half-Alaska Native 15-year-old girl named Alberta Skank stood up against the segregated seating policy.
How can I help you?
Hi, can you connect me to Alberta Adams' room?
Yeah, hold on, she's right here. Hello?
Hi, Alberta. This is Barb Amarok in Nome.
Back in 2008, while pursuing her PhD in Indigenous Studies at University of Alaska Fairbanks, Barb Amarok interviewed several elders from Nome about the Dream Theater.
Went to the movies. I think it cost 25 cents.
And it wasn't just the movies these elders remembered. They also spoke about the segregated seating.
There were three blocks of seats. The middle block was for white people. The one on the east side was for breeds, quarter breeds and half breeds. And the block of seats on the west side was for full three-quarter and full-blood natives.
Barb was also able to interview Alberta Skank herself in 2008, which was a year before Alberta passed away, about what she remembered about the incident at the Dream Theater.
Well, the whole theater was full, except those two seats in the center aisle in the back of the white section. And I wondered, how come there, you know, at the time? I didn't think much of it. And then the police yelling came and got me that I had to leave.
So did they take you to jail?
not on that occasion. They took me to jail on when I went on my own. They wouldn't sell me a ticket. So there was always kids standing outside, and I had one of the native boys buy me, get me, I gave him the money, and I went alone. And Agnes Galvin, I think I forgot her last name. The usher, the ticket taker, met me at the door and wouldn't let me in. And Daddy said, if she touches you, you hit her. And I did. And that's when the police came and got me. I was 15 years old and I got mad. And I was mad as a hornet at the time.
Disgusted with the segregated seating and the treatment she received, Alberta wired Governor Ernest Greening. And eventually, Alberta's case went on to help the fight for the passing of the 1945 Anti-Discrimination Act in Alaska. That was 10 years before Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat, and nearly 20 years before the Civil Rights Act.
You know, Alberta, you have a lot of strength, and to do what you did at such a young age is very, very honorable and should be recognized. And you should be very famous, and these young children in the school need to be learning about what you did.
Oh, that's what I heard.
Barb wants Alberta's story to be taught in all schools, but especially in Alaska schools, where the story of a local hero has particular importance.
Learning about people from their own community, region, and state helps them to realize that they are capable of doing positive things for others. I think it also gives them the message that who they are and where they come from is very important, and that it also gives them the message that we don't have to rely on people from other places to help solve our own problems and make our communities a better place.
Reporting with Courtney Cousins in Nome, I'm Kristen Loeffler.
To hear a longer version of this story, go to knom.org. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes in Eagle River, Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Rachel Waldholtz and Robert Wolseley in Sitka, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Lisa Fu in Juneau, Elizabeth Jenkins in Hoonah, and Christian Loeffler in Nome. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Gokey is our web editor. And I'm Ann Hillman. Have a lovely evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Raven Alaska, providing business travel needs in over 100 communities across the state. Find more at flyraven.com. ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Garrison Keillor, one of the most beloved radio hosts and acclaimed humorists, is coming to the Alaska State Fair with his America the Beautiful tour on Sunday, August 30th at 3 p.m. This 2.5-hour show will feature Prairie Home Companion classics with piano master Richard Dworsky, sound effects man Fred Newman, and other special guests. Tickets at alaskastatefair.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Fair.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.